Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to a new week. It really is a new week. I swear to you, it's Monday, the 20th day of April, 2020. Fast approaching reopen, are we? I don't know. Are we limping towards reopen? What's going on with reopen? I don't know. Oh, what a weekend. What a life it's been. Finally watched Tiger King. Finished watching Tiger King. There's just really not a good person in that whole thing. There's not a redeeming human being in that whole documentary, but it's oddly fascinating. And I don't know if Joe Exotic deserves to be in prison for 22 years, but I do know that the world is a better place because he is. And I think it would be a better place if almost everybody in that documentary were in prison as well, just for the rest of their lifetimes is all, not too much longer. Anyway, I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Email is derek@dailycaller.com. Thank you for spreading the word, tuning in, telling a friend, all of that stuff. We're growing. We're really growing. And it's because of you. So have you told somebody about the show? Have you taken their phone and subscribed them to it today? Should be an exercise just like your daily vitamin. Lord, no, I guess you probably can't take anybody's phone. Never mind. Still, spread it on social media. You grab somebody's phone, they're probably going to go, I'm never touching that phone again right now. But yeah, this show is a safe space for your freedom of thought. Special show, again, another interview edition. It is with a Michigan State Senator, the President Pro Tem of the Michigan State Senate. Just so happens to be a friend of mine. He entered politics after he moved back to Michigan. We both moved out here, didn't know each other, and got to know each other out here. And then he moved back to run for office and won. So knowing me is not an anchor when it comes to politics, shockingly enough. Michigan, of course, is in the news because of Governor Gretchen Whitmer and her ridiculous orders. So we talk about Detroit getting hammered, talk about the rest of the state, talk about the governor's orders, the protests against governor. There are protests all across the country. People wanting to get back to work, can't blame them. And Michigan is sort of the forefront of that. So we talk about that as well, the Operation Gridlock. It's a great interview, if I do say so myself. Eric, spelled A-R-I-C, Nesbitt, N-E-S-B-I-T-T, if you want to look him up online. You think, Eric, it's not spelled the normal way. Good dude. We both worked for Grover Norquist back in the day, although he worked for him before I did. That's how we got to know each other and became friends. So that's what's on tap for today, was we have another big week of interviews and just general shows on days I can't get interviews scheduled. And I sure do appreciate the hell out of you. Just on a bit of personal news, Quinn's potty training is going well, and she recited the alphabet unprovoked for the first time Saturday night. She sang the song, and then she kept doing it. She got it right. I sometimes get it wrong. Actually, that's not true. I once memorized the alphabet backwards, so in case I was ever pulled over by a cop, I would be able to, there's always those rumors. Well, you're pulled over and they think you're drunk driving, they'll ask you to say the alphabet backwards, which I don't think would hold up in court, because I don't think most people could do it sober. But I taught myself how to do it backwards just in case. ZYXWTUVSRQPONMLKJIHGFEDCBA. So there you go. Little bit of worthless trivia about me. But not worthless is GetTheTea.com. Yes, go to GetTheTea.com. That's where you find Life Change Tea, our wonderful sponsor. It helps you out. It hooks you up. It keeps you regular and fills you up with energy. How? Because it cleans you out and allows your body to absorb the nutrition, more of the nutrition from the food that you eat. That's the beauty of it. That's right. It's the tea that makes you go. You go to GetTheTea.com. You choose your flavor. You brew up a whole gallon of it. You drink a cup a day, and you'll be regular. And on top of that, you will find yourself feeling better and getting more energy. Lord knows we need all the energy we can get. It helps your immune system, too. GetTheTea.com. At checkout, you enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K. You get free fast shipping on top of the great sale prices. You can't beat that deal. They've been supporting the show for a very long time. And the only reason they do that is because of you guys and your repeat customers out there. So that's a testament to how well their product works. And I can vouch for it too. GetTheTea.com, promo code Derek at checkout. Click apply. Free fast shipping. The interview with Eric was going to be a half an hour. It ended up being like 55 minutes because I just like talking to him. So you'll find him interesting, fascinating. Plus, you'll get an update. If you think your governor's bad, they've got nothing on Gretchen Adolf Whitler up there. Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. The restrictions are absurd. And keep in mind, throughout all of this, she's a front runner for the Democratic vice presidential nomination. All of this is known about her. And the Democratic Party still thinks, hey, you know what? She'd be a great number two. And given Joe Biden's mental capacity, there is a good possibility that number two would become number one. So this is what the Democratic Party, this is where their heart is, essentially. So you'll get an education in that sense. So I'll start the interview, and thank you for listening. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. The website, if you want to help out, is patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. And stay safe. All right, as we've been doing throughout isolation, desolation, Mad Max, Thunderdome world, and all of that, we've been checking in with people around the country to find out how they're holding up and pick their brains, and people that have, you know, been in impressive positions, former Army Rangers, Hollywood actors, and Adam Baldwin, Bo Snerdly, Rush Limbaugh, David Limbaugh, everybody related to Limbaugh except for Rush, Senator Marsha Blackburn on Friday. And today we go down to the state level, to one of the states that is really in the news a lot. So not often, actually it's never, there's one time a friend of mine has actually been elected to office. I've been lucky to become friends with people in office, but I figured knowing me was disqualifying to ever get there. That turned out not to be the case. At least once, we're joined by Eric Nesbitt, Republican state senator and the president pro tem of the Michigan State Senate. Eric, how is the Great Lakes State? How are the Great Lakes State holding up?
Well, the people are holding up, I think, pretty well. It's just, I just wish the politicians would listen a bit more to the people.
That really, your governor desperately wants to be Joe Biden's vice presidential pick. She can't come out and say it, but it strikes me as she's in over her head while trying to reach for higher office. Am I wrong in that?
I think there's a big dash for her to be the vice presidential candidate. And I remind folks that that's not the way to get rid of her, because Biden, Sleepy Joe, is going to lose this fall to the president. So we'll just have her back and probably a little bit more angrier than she was before.
Now, all of my family lives in Michigan, so I've been getting updates. My Democratic family members think she's doing what's necessary. My conservative members of the family think she's nuts gone power mad. You're obviously a conservative Republican, but at the beginning of this, as this was rolling out, was there any indication she was going to go so far as to ban the sale of seeds for gardening and the American flag?
No, we really tried to work together for that. I mean, we gave her a lot of leeway that first, I'd say, 2.5-3 weeks, because, you know, the whole mantra, we're in it together. We didn't want to turn into the Democrats in Washington, D.C. that are sniping at President Trump every chance they get. And so that's what we were really trying to to work on was that we wanted to build that trust. And as we've been sadly experiencing, you know, we believe that, you know, it is a serious threat to our health, our families, and communities. And the people of Michigan, I think, understand this threat and are practicing this rigorous hygiene, social distancing, proper protocols in the workforce. We've seen the curve flatten here in our state, as they talked about. But we also, as we look at our country's core values, our personal responsibility, freedom, and working together to achieve results. And I think we will defeat this virus and we'll come out strong and embracing it. But our governor, I think, needs to trust the citizens to be thoughtful and make healthy decisions. And I think the first few weeks, the vast majority of folks I heard from was viewing it as, okay, this is 3 weeks. Let's load up on personal protective equipment for our frontline healthcare workers. Let's expand health infrastructure facilities there at the Cobo Hall or the Suburban Showplace, the National Guard involved to get these overflow places ready, make sure our healthcare workers, our first responders, our police are protected with the appropriate personal protective equipment. And you're seeing businesses transition over throughout the state here in Michigan. You know, I have a winemaker, you know, a winery down the road. They're making, you know, hand sanitizer. I have a box manufacturer that's making face shields. There's a company down the road making the, you know, what's needed to make face, you know, the healthcare face masks. And so people are switching over. You see that ingenuity. We've started calling it the arsenal of healthcare. And so as we saw in January and February, you know, these trade links to China has been a real serious challenge as they sucked up all the personal protective equipment around the world in January and February as they were lying to everybody. And then you wonder why we have shortages here in the U.S. And I think the last few weeks we've seen an increased availability of personal protective equipment. I was talking to some you know, folks involved with the hospitals on Friday, and we do seem to have a pretty good supply. We can use more. We can use a lot more, especially the number of elective surgeries that aren't being allowed. And so I do think that we were in it together. And as you're looking at it, what is the goal of any of these orders? The goal is, you know, in the United States, the goal is to get 97% of the people to comply, right? And yet, instead of saying, you know, you guys we're doing well, we're flattening the curve, we still have more work to do. You know, I know there's some complaints, but, you know, let's look at how people can get back to work and do it safely. And instead, she just crunched down even further on individuals and what they're able to do.
It really was draconian, and I want to focus on that for a second, because were you guys in the legislature blindsided by the extent to which her executive order went?
Oh, yeah. We, I mean, because you remember, she was asking for a 70-day extension. She's saying, I was going to do the emergency orders for 70 days. And we're like, you know, let's go through with the White House recommendations. President Trump recommended through the end of the month. And so we'll extend it for 23 days instead of the 70 days that she's having, so that the legislature has a, you know, has a say in it. And then 2 days later, on the Thursday before Easter, the day before Good Friday, she came out with a plan that just further just, you know, put the screws to the people of Michigan. You can go out on a kayak, but you can't go out with your family's motorboat. You can go ahead and still have abortions in Michigan, but you can't go in and pick up a tomato plant at Menards. I mean, there's so many odd things that I just don't quite understand in her orders. And then
has she ever explained that? Because if you're out on like the motorboat thing, I we'll get into the abortion thing in a second, but the motorboat thing doesn't make any sense. If you've got a you can go out on the water, it just, you can't use an engine to do it. It doesn't seem to make any sense. Did she ever try to explain or rationalize why?
She says, being a bunch of man babies and whiners out here, for, you know, people are dying, which people are, and we need to take this seriously. But as you look at it, taking my family out on a little pontoon ride around a little inland lake, you know, I don't quite understand what the harm is on that. And that's the same. You look at it, somebody to mow your, I have plenty of 80-year-old constituents that have somebody to mow their yard or land, or landscapers to do their flower beds because they have underlying health issues. They can't get out. Nope. You can't hire them. You're telling me a one person crew out there mowing grass or planting flowers isn't a lot, isn't allowed. Well, you can't even buy flowers in Michigan. And so this is the challenge, is that 95% of the people, the constituents I talk to, they just want to get back to work. And they know that they need to take this seriously. And they know that they need to use proper hygiene, better sanitation, and social distance to do their jobs. But I just had a story this last week. I was talking to an excavator, and they were working on a project in my district. They're building a new hospital. They started this a year ago with this project. And the excavator's going in. The local police stopped them. It's like, where are you working? Well, they explained, okay, that's allowed. Well, where are you taking it? And they explain where they're taking it. And they see that there was a backhoe that was moving some of the dirt there. They're like, well, that's not essential. That person can't work.
Oh my God.
One person in a backhoe or in a bulldozer that never come within 30 feet of each other saying that you can't work. So that's really the insanity of the order. And you go on to her website, the governor's website, there's over 500 frequently asked questions. So we're running state government by frequently asked questions instead of clear, concise, general rules of.
Well, and it seems like based on her whim too. The order originally became the extent of the order became nationally prominent when people started tweeting photographs of things at Myers and Walmart that were roped off that said, this is deemed non-essential, you can't buy it. And among them were seeds to plant, cucumbers and things like that. But also there were children's car seats, things like that. Well, as a parent, they outgrow them. You sometimes got to update them. Now, she had to come out and say, no, those are okay. But is it really to that extent that somebody asks a question and she goes, all right, you can do that, or no, you can't do this?
Yeah, there's a frequently asked question on baby seats. And that was mostly prompted because Meghan McCain tweeted it, are you serious? Because some stores had roped off the furniture section because it specifically said furniture section, paint, carpet and flooring, garden centers, plant nurseries, and paint, would be all roped off. And so what some of these stores did is baby cribs and other baby supplies are in that furniture area. So they went ahead, they only had 7 hours to comply to this ruling. And so you have mass chaos because 98% of the people want to comply, try to figure out what the rules are and try to comply with it. Right. You don't need a rogue prosecutor or state police knocking on the door saying, nope, that's not roped off properly. And so from my understanding is that, well, that was in the furniture section. So we roped off the entire furniture section. And then while it wasn't meant to have the baby car seats or, because the mattresses and baby cribs, they're also in the furniture section. And so it just provides this huge confusion, which then pushes folks to really say, well, what are we really following? What are the clear, concise rules that are there? And why is it that Michiganders can't be trusted to make smart decisions and challenge businesses and workers to create safe work conditions? And I think that's the real underlying challenge, is that if you challenge these businesses and companies to actually make smart decisions and make them as clearly as possible, maybe we could have a 20% unemployment rate instead of a 28% unemployment rate. I mean, we don't know what the unemployment rate is right now, but I mean, that's the thing, is that and it's going to be important long term to have more people out, working so we can get through this.
Well, you also, the stores that are allowed to remain open still have to make payroll, right? So them being allowed to sell whatever it is that they sell, just they're lucky enough because they also sell food. They open. They should be allowed to sell whatever it is they sell, because that helps them with more revenue. That helps the manufacturer of those products with, you know, staying in business. It just seems like she is, like I said it before, she's in over her head. If you're homebound and you say, well, I really wanted to paint the dining room, I just didn't have time to do it. Now I've got nothing but time. So while we're out at Myers or Walmart, I'm going to pick up a couple gallons of paint and we'll bang that out. So we'll at least be productive at home and not go bouncing off the walls, rewatching Tiger King for the fifth time. And the governor's telling you no. It seems wildly inappropriate and an overreach aside from an abuse of power. Well, that's why you end up with those protests.
Yeah. And I think it's something where the people, especially that first 3 weeks, they felt, you know, we're all into this together and we're making headway. We're catching up on PPE. We're trying to make this, this happen and try to, you know, heck, I don't want to visit. As much as I'd love to visit my mom and for her to see her granddaughter, I haven't visited her in a month. I go grocery shopping for her. I drop her fruit off, you know, in her car, but she's over 70. She has underlying health conditions. I don't want to, you know, if I'm asymptomatic, I don't want to give her, you know, any threat of seeing her in the hospital. But this is the challenge we have in the American experiment of self-government. You need to have buy-in from the populace to be able to govern effectively. Especially in circumstances like this, where you really need to have a very high compliance and buy into the policies. And, you know, just, I guess, remind you of Federalist 51, where, you know, they say, if men were all angels, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary. So the challenges that our leaders have to have is to believe that the vast majority of Americans want to keep others safe. There's always knuckleheads in the crowd. That's the beauty of the challenge of the American system, is that it is messy, but you got to challenge the people to do the right thing.
On the personal protective issue, the governor also banned elective surgeries. And you think that, what is that, nose jobs and tummy tucks and things like that? But it's actually much broader than that. Does it not include things like joint replacements?
I was talking to somebody who has a case of gangrene, and the local hospital was interpreting it that they couldn't use the machine that they could, that they battle gangrene with. And so they're concerned about losing, losing their foot. Now, as you look at it, the healthcare folks are provided large swaths, I believe, in what's elective surgery and what's not elective surgery. And some are interpreted a lot more broadly for the safety and health of individuals. And some hospitals are interpreting it very, very narrowly to really only emergency and life-saving procedures.
But it's a matter of saving that order. I assume the logic behind it was to save the PPE for the frontline responders to COVID-19. Yet abortion requires PPE. That was determined explicitly by Governor Whitmer to be essential and life-affirming somehow.
Yeah, she actually called it life-affirming, which is the... I'm just left speechless. If we're going to be all in this together, then killing little unborn babies is, you know, and using, using personal protective equipment, whether it's face shields, whether it's N95 masks or other things for the procedures, while you're killing an unborn baby, I just think is beyond appalling. But I think it goes back to your original bit of, you know, the governor seems to be going out of her way to try out to be Biden's vice presidential, you know, nominee. And as you know, that if you're not a radical anti-lifer, then you're not going to get on the ticket.
No, I'm surprised that they're not limited to just abortion providers as a potential for vice president. Someday, I predict in the next three cycles, that will be it. All these draconian
rules and regulations, and I think it's mostly the arbitrary nature of it, led to famously the big protest in Lansing, the state capital, the other day, which Governor Whitmer used to say that she might have to extend the stay-at-home order because people were outside driving around in their cars and honking horns. She claimed that they were waving swastikas. The extent to, by the way, the most famous picture from that event is from an event in Idaho, actually, of the flag with Trump, Pence, and swastika. It was a Bernie Sanders guy, but somehow that got thrown into the Lansing protest. But to the extent that any sort of swastikas existed, they were in protest of her fascistic orders. Yet she's trying to portray these people as it was a political rally. They are Nazis. They are not to be taken seriously. And they may necessitate her extending these draconian restrictions. As you're watching people exercise their unambiguous First Amendment rights of assembly and of petitioning their government to redress their grievances and freedom of speech, it's a threefer right there in the First Amendment, and the governor using that, threatening to extend her measures. What is the Republican response to that?
Well, I mean, the first thing is, even France allows still didn't limit protesters' ability to protest. So even our good friends over there, and just like anything, there's always, you know, as I was mentioning, there's always a few knuckleheads that are out there. But I the full reports that I got back was that 99% of them all stayed within their cars, all did the operation gridlock, you know, to show the force of thousands and thousands and thousands of Michiganders showing up to saying, we want to get back to work. We want to do it safely. And then you had that small handful of folks that wanted attention. And that's, of course, where does the media go? Where does the media go? They only cover those. They only cover, you know, those individuals that are attention seekers. They don't cover those everyday Americans that are just that were just driving through the town as part of the operation gridlock. So that was, you know, it's, and then you go beyond that in terms of some of the pictures you mentioned. One where, you know, wasn't even from there. I saw another headline on an MSN article where it was a town unrecognizable. I'd never seen this building or this crowd before, saying this was in Lansing. So I think this is part of that, that challenge, is that how do you actually deliver that message? But they even, you know, I mean, you even have, there was a guy that posted a picture of showing an ambulance couldn't get through and, you know, near a hospital. It was definitely not the day. It wasn't in that traffic. It must have been taken some other day, some other time, because even the local hospital and the local ambulance and the local fire department all said there was no issues with ambulances going to the hospital. and so this is what I'm finding, is that individuals don't want to have that, you know, those on the left don't want to have that conversation of how do you safely reopen? How do you challenge businesses and workers to be safe and do the right thing instead?
And responsible. People are responsible, especially if you let them be. And the Democrats don't seem to, on a national level, believe that anybody can be act responsibly without a government dictate.
And then these are the logical questions that follow. How can you buy marijuana and alcohol but not seeds or mulch? Being able to go out on a sailboat but not a motorboat is absurd. That someone cannot get paid to mow a lawn is entirely arbitrary. That, you know, a one-man crew trying to build a house, she says, no, you go on unemployment.
You know, I was looking at the Detroit Free Press a couple of weeks ago, and it's the economy of Michigan is one of the top five job loss states so far. The restaurant industry, according to the Free Press, lost 72,000 jobs, almost $500 million in sales in just the first 3 or 4 weeks of this. If Is the governor talking to anybody? I mean, you guys control the Senate there. Is the governor talking to you and your colleagues about the next step, or is she planning on going this alone somehow?
We haven't really heard from her in 2 weeks now. And I mean, heck, she implied that the legislature was not essential during this time of emergency declarations. The Senate Majority Leader is planning on, her office did recently reach out. I don't know whether she feels public opinion starting to change or that that for health of Michiganders and for individual health, that you got to have a strong economy also. You know, both go hand in hand, but there is a call scheduled to, you know, later this week. We'll see what comes of it. But it's something where I think there's a history of a real distrust between the legislature and the governor. And remember, this is same governor where a year ago she was proposing a 45-cent per gallon gas tax increase, a 45% increase in the small business tax, the increase in the small business tax was to go ahead and pay for special treat, you know, special tax breaks for retired public employees, and then went ahead and the budget went through and single-handedly vetoed a bunch of items and tried to blame us for it, whether they were items for autism services or opioid abuse services, and then blamed us that she vetoed it. So there's a lot of mistrust that's between the legislature and herself, and it's just it's really sad to see, especially in a time of an emergency, because we could have been in a spot where these protests last week didn't happen, we'd still be working together. But her, saying that there's no trust for the people of Michigan, it's very, very, very sad. That's why last week, Senate leadership and Senate Republicans, we've been trying to, or last week and a half, been trying to shift the conversation from just critical and essential definitions to safe definition in the workplace, and trying to challenge businesses to come up with those. And that's why we created a bipartisan work group 2 weeks ago on really trying to come up with some of these recommendations to reopen our economy safely. And then last Thursday, the Senate Republicans, we introduced an Open Michigan Safely proposal, which really showing a phased in transition, geographic differentiation, and then a resurgence plans, but trying to use actual data instead of just a whim of the governor.
Well, that data is wildly important in the geographic regions. People always forget about the Upper Peninsula. They forget how big Michigan is geographically. It's a gigantic state. And the concentration of coronavirus cases is in Southeast Michigan, the Detroit metro area.
80% of them, the three counties around Detroit.
Yeah, Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb. That leaves, 99%, not of the population, but 99% of the geography left to, where my father lives up in Roscommon. There's a couple of cases, but it's not, I mean, we used to drive golf balls from the driveway. Because there's nothing across the street.
They're kind of naturally socially distanced there. It's kind of like Wyoming or Montana or South Dakota. Outside of certain cities, you're pretty much your next door neighbor is 2 miles away.
And for them to be forced to stay home constantly, there's little rebellions, but there's also sheriffs up there of various counties who are saying we're not going to enforce these laws because they are arbitrary and they go too far and they're damaging to people. Plus we, preserve people's rights and this is stripping them of their rights. Is there an appetite amongst your Democratic colleagues in the Senate to work to recognize that, Petoskey, the Traverse City, these are different from the Detroit metro area and should be treated differently?
There hasn't been necessarily any announcement. They always, a lot of them seem to want to, slow walk any discussion to reopening any of the economy. And it's very unfortunate is because it's these workers and individuals and businesses that lead for the income for state government to actually operate. And so, but that is one of the things we're offering is saying that, you know, that there is a geographic distinction between these places, and some of these places could have looser restrictions than other ones. But no, mostly all you get back is, you know, we're all one state, we're all in this together, but it's kind of confusing when you have 40% of the population, Metro Detroit has 80% of the cases. And even the head of the local hospital up in Grand Rapids, the second largest city in the state, announced, it was really about 2 weeks ago, where she says, yep, the people in Michigan, West Michigan, have been really doing a good job. We figure they've flattened the curve by about 65%. But there's no indication that there's going to be much of a change on that from the governor. But in our proposal that we're working to put through, that's what we'd like to see, demonstrate and show a difference, that there is different regions in the state.
Part of that, and one of the things that's, I don't know if it's, I only grew up in one state, but it seems unique to Michigan, is the idea of going up north for the weekend in the summer, in spring, summer, and fall. Winter, not so much, unless you own a snowplow. But people, even especially middle-class people, you can have a second home because land is affordable. People put a trailer on it or get together and sort of Amish themselves into a cottage. They build it all with their friends. A lot of people in the Metro Detroit area, in the southern part of the state, even the western part of the state, have a second home, a vacation home up north, and it's not all rich people. The governor has forbidden travel to northern Michigan by those people. You can't go to your secondary home unless you are already there. I have gotten mixed reports.
But even if you own a cabin within your own same county, you can't go to that one. Yeah, it doesn't differentiate. It just between residences, if you have more than one residence. So if somebody has a place, you know, even 10 miles away on a lake and they happen to live in town, they can't go to that either.
Now, I've gotten mixed reviews from friends and family back in Michigan because of what we just discussed about what's going on in Michigan, how the vast majority of the cases are up there, and they don't want people bringing it up north. It seems rational.
Well, in the first few weeks, when you have an issue where you could be 14 days of being able to spread it and you don't show any symptoms, there was a real concern of the northern hospitals of capacity. You know, we don't have the capacity up in, up in Gaylord or Roscommon or some of these other counties with the ICU beds or the other ones. But then, as we've been working through it, is that you're having hospitals lay off people because there isn't this, which is a mixed blessing that they're, you know, which is a good thing that it's not spreading like a lot of these estimates are saying. But they won't give credit to the people for trying to make some common sense issues. I mean, I have a sister that lives in Detroit, and they just, younger family. She tested positive for coronavirus, and fortunately their whole family's okay. The husband just got through, but it's something where now they're through it. They're most researchers believe that they're immune. And so how do you figure all this into it? Well, you put the onus on the individual and you challenge them that the most people don't want to hurt their grandma or their mother or their neighbors or their friends. But it's something where if you're going to go up to your cabin for 3 days or even to your lake house for 3 days, I don't really see what's necessarily wrong with that, especially when it takes a few days for you to get bad enough to require an ICU and other things. I hear some of the same arguments of folks, from Illinois coming up here. But under her order, those folks from Illinois, that's just fine. As long as it's not as long as they're not doing a short-term rental, as long as their own home.
That really is the sort of arbitrary nature of it all. What is the plan for Detroit? Detroit obviously needs special attention. Is it getting it from the state government? Is the city government holding up? I just see numbers out of Detroit and they're bad, but I don't see, I don't know the solution or how it's being addressed.
Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest hot spot was City of Detroit, Wayne County. Over the last, I'd say since the first week of April, you've seen a real flattening. The curve's just flattened. The cases, from the 9th of April, to now, cases have increased by about, 3,000. So that's over about a week. Compared to what they were expecting in terms of doubling. And so you've been seeing a real, flattening of that curve. Abbott Lab with their 5-minute test has been working to implement that in the city of Detroit for the first responders, for some of the healthcare workers. Some of the hospitals in the city were really challenged. It seems like they're starting to get a little breather room. And some of the suburban hospitals, they got close to some peak capacity, but that's been, it seems like they have some breathing room now.
You mentioned China earlier, Eric, and Michigan, like many states, is linked to China in as far as manufacturing or reliance, at least for parts to manufacture. The auto industry has outsourced a lot of stuff to China, for example. Is there anything the state could do to, or even just legally, to try and, I guess, exact justice is what I'm looking, hold China accountable for any of this, or is that just going to be up to the federal government and an international effort?
Well, I think as locally or at the state level, you need to look at making sure that, your supply chains of some of these critical goods are established. If you're buying, personal protective equipment or warehousing, that I think you should encourage, figure out ways to encourage hospitals or health providers and other ones to make sure it's, American made, or at least made by a friendly nation that won't cut off the supply like China did. And I mean, you're even seeing reports last week of testing kits being held hostage in China. What'd they say? 2.5 million in the Wall Street Journal last week, saying that they were being held hostage in China.
Well, the ones they have shipped to the world have been defective by and large, well, too.
And that's also part of the challenge. But I was, but this is something where you need to encourage and understand that the importance of a supply chain on areas like this. And I think there is a role of state government in how we look at some of the needed equipment, the necessary equipment that's out there, and trying to, instead of being able to save a quarter by sourcing it from China, that maybe we can pay that extra quarter and source it in the Midwest here. And so that's the longer term, challenge, is keeping those supply chains open.
Well, that really is an opportunity. This is where the legislatures can step in, because it is a lot of regulatory issues and tax issues that keep businesses, that made it advantageous for businesses to outsource. Oh, those absolutely can be repealed, and there is a lot that can be done that would incentivize them to insource. Are you going to go after businesses? There seems to be a gigantic, I grew up in Detroit. You grew up in sort of the middle of the state, western side, still lower. But when there were troubles in the auto industry, there was invariably a Toyota or a Honda parked in a parking lot at a softball field that for $5, you could take 5 swings with a sledgehammer at it, and like, oh, the Japanese are beating us and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Take it out on that. It would go away when the labor issue or whatever the issue was resolved. But there seems to be a genuine appetite in the United States right now to where we are willing to pay a quarter more to become less dependent upon China. The pharmaceutical manufacturer is a big thing, antibiotics. It seems to me like states should be moving and scrambling now to sort of attract those businesses or encourage wealthy businessmen and women to maybe, hey, throw some of your money into this. We will help you in every way possible. Plus, it'll be a great way to recover economically.
Well, and this is the challenge. You got to have a long-term horizon on all this also. I was reading an article about a surgical mask manufacturer down in Texas, and you would think they'd be running 3 shifts a day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the mask manufacturer goes, we've done this before 12 years ago, you know, with H1N1 and some of the other history. And then all of a sudden, 2 years later, all my contracts dry up and there's nothing there because they want to save that quarter to go to China to source it. And so I do think there needs to be some drivers, whether it's through our healthcare sector with Medicare or Medicaid, to say, and you see the same with pill manufacturing out of, you know, whether it's India or China, that if they have export controls and they can limit that export, you're at their beck and call. And that's dangerous, very dangerous. And I think we need to get our priorities right in terms of what's actually, you know, critical, you know, infrastructure here in the nation. But one other thing that I don't think is necessarily talked about is as much is really how much better the resiliency of our healthcare system has been compared to Western Europe, compared mm-hmm. to Italy and Spain and France, how easily that got overrun. Even in New York, which has a much steeper curve than Italy does. I think even downstate New York has a steeper curve than Lombardy, which is all around Milan and in northern Italy, that even though that the U.S. was one of the later spots to get hit, and the shortage of a lot of the equipment that's already been gobbled up by Europe or Asia was there, that I do think how diffused our healthcare system is actually did step up pretty heroically compared to a socialized system that you've seen, you know, in some of the Western European nations.
No, and we've seen innovation. We've seen companies saying, okay, we can't get enough masks, but we can sterilize those masks and, mm-hmm. you know, reuse them. And that's, again, a testament to the American spirit. We've also seen, we both worked at Americans for Tax Reform a lifetime and a half ago. And yeah. they have been compiling a list of regulations, state and federal, that have been either repealed or waived during this. It to me strikes me as an opportunity to say, why were those ever in place in the first place? This could be an opportunity to really look at the hurdles that government has put and the anchors government put around our neck to prevent innovation and that have hampered our growth at a time when Lord knows we're going to need all the growth we can get.
Oh, absolutely. I was actually, it's funny you mentioned that. Actually, I was looking at that list. I think it's over 300 items now this morning. And that list keeps on expanding because, you know, and this is what you're told is that they were put into effect for the health and safety of individuals, a lot of these. And then you see the repeal to help with the health and safety of individuals mm-hmm. during the crisis. And so somebody's not being honest with us. Let's get
well, you and I both know they've largely been put in place because one industry wanted it as a cudgel against another industry.
Yep. And that's the reason why they limit the number of hospital beds or limit the number of ventilators or limit the number of other things is because they don't want the competition within the neighboring them. And so if they can use the power and force of government to eliminate that kind of competition, then why do you have to bother with it? But now all of a sudden you look at it and that's the same thing with the healthcare world is like they had to do a waiver for somebody in a different state to do a telehealth work.
Right.
And nobody's mentioning, you know, and this is something that I think has been missed is everybody's talking testing now. You know, we need to have full testing. I've been doing a lot of research this last week on that because I do think that's one of those things for wider opening of the economy is trying to figure out the testing dilemma and working on that. And there's supply shortages, just like there was with PPE. And let's work on challenging businesses to catch up on that. But you go back to end of January through the beginning of March, when President Trump took the action of banning flights from China, and Nancy Pelosi was saying everybody should go out and still have party time in San Francisco and New York and everything. but that was because Trump was a racist. But at that time, you got to also look at the failure of government for not partnering with private sector soon enough. Everybody was harping President Trump on, why aren't you visiting the CDC? Why aren't you engaging the CDC? Well, what did the CDC do in February? What do they do?
They screwed up their testing.
We got this testing. We got this taken care of. Don't worry about it. Well, and you had state labs and private labs that were saying, no, we can help out. We can expand capacity to get it. Nope, we got this. The arrogance of government. And they in Washington, when there was some first test, the test didn't work locally. They were flying those tests back to Atlanta at the CDC. And it wasn't until the third week of March where the CDC is like, okay, we screwed up on this enough. why don't we go ahead and have state labs and hospital labs and private labs start testing? Instead, you could have been we could be a month further ahead on testing I guess you could look at the chain reaction. If China was more open and transparent, which is really hard for a communist regime to do, I understand mm-hmm. that. But and then the WHO, who's trying to not piss off the communist Chinese. And then the CDC in their initial arrogance that, well, we got all this testing taken care of. If you engage and you incentivize the private sector in the United States of America, the ingenuity, the creativity of the American people knows no bounds. And I think that's something that anybody in government needs to remember, that if properly challenged, they'll always respond and we'll always win.
I feel like giving you an amen, Eric.
had to watch church on Facebook this morning, but we got it. So
I'm going to end the serious portion of this interview right there, because I that says it all. It says what I've been saying, but it says it much better than I have been saying it. And I want to ask you now, sort of on a personal level, you're a new father. We're both relatively new fathers. I got a 2.5 year or 2 year head start on you. But how has this challenged you and your wife as parents now? I mean, you mentioned your mother lives close by, but you can't, I'm sure she's dying to see her granddaughter, but it being in the house, I've got, thank God, Mike, and your kids too. Not your kid is not old enough to recognize the passage of time. My kids don't realize they haven't been outside anywhere except the backyard for 6 weeks or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the people with teenagers have got to be bouncing off the walls. How has the family been holding up?
We've been blessed, and my wife still goes to work most days, and either for a full day or at least 5 or 6 hours. Her office is closed to the public, but she still has a lot of work to do in terms of that. So I've been balancing Zoom conferences and responding to constituents as I've been hanging out with Catherine, and I'm going to value this time for a long time as our, mm-hmm. As our daycare shut down also. And it's something where you try to keep your circle, of who you connect with as close as possible to the immediate family as possible all the time. And so we've been blessed, but I let me tell you, I know you live in the swamp and built up on top of each other and all that. And we have a little bit more room to roam. But I do think that with some of the families, I hope there's a new respect for some folks that homeschool their kids, because that's something where it is a total love and devotion for a lot of these parents to be able to homeschool their, their children, and something, you know, provide this time to teach them and to hopefully draw a little closer to the family. But I know for a fact that there's a lot of people that are just are hurting, are really struggling out there. You know, their job isn't just a job, it's their identity, it's who they are. Their business isn't just a business that can be bailed out. It's, you know, they were having trouble making payroll a month ago, and now and now they're looking at, well, another week of this, we're out of, you know, we're out of business. And no matter what the federal government does, because I don't think there's enough money in the world to save all these, you know, all these businesses. And I can only imagine the depression, the mental health issues, the long-term poverty issues that are going to be created from this. We can, you know, I think this is the challenge upon all of us to value our family, value you know, God, and value our communities as we come together and help out each other, those that are homebound. But it is something where we're, you know, we have a 10.5 month old, and I was able to see her walk for the first time. That was something I might not have been able to do if I was up in Lansing. But it's something where, or might have been here, you know, otherwise. But you don't know. But you gotta. I think in this time and age, I think a lot of folks need to take a little bit more time and show a little more grace, a little more patience, a little bit more love. My hope is that most, you know, is that all the leaders try to use the best information that they have instead of doing something that they know, you know, may hurt others. And there'll be a lot of you know, a lot of learning both on the healthcare side and on the economic side in the years to come. But that's something where. You know, and as you have examples from around the world, that I think it's probably good that you know have these different places like you know, Sweden taking a little different tack than a you know, than a Denmark, or in Italy taking a little different tack than Hong Kong, and I think that's, as we go through it, is that what is that, you know. Is you look at human history, there's been, you know, this is a bit more normal than we'd like to take it on, take it as, you know, people forget the, you know, smallpox outbreak during the Revolutionary War and George Washington vaccinating his troops with smallpox, you know, kind of the first mass vaccinations, if you will, was to protect his troops from smallpox, or in the 19th century when cholera or typhoid lessen the New York's population massively, or, you know, 100 years ago with the Spanish flu, that, again, we were in the middle of World War One then. Information from the government, they didn't want to really share how deadly it was and the challenges it presented. And we don't have the healthcare understanding then that we do now. And so in the history of the world, this happens. It's how do we get through this? And hopefully we can learn that we can get through this a lot smarter than just a heavy hammer every time. And we can do it through out of facts and information and proactiveness instead of out of fear.
Yeah, it'd be nice if government planned ahead and actually stuck with a plan ahead rather than, you know, well, it's the next cycle and that's all we care about. We've been kicking the can on a great many issues, economically, Social Security, Medicare, the entitlement crush, but that piper is going to demand to be paid. It'd be nice if we dealt with that and if we dealt with the concept of this next, you know, just have it chambered, have it ready to go, keep it there. Lastly, Eric, there's a push to recall Governor Whitmer, or as she's affectionately called by a lot of opposition, Whitler. Michigan has, you know, you think, well, nobody gets recalled. And it was unsuccessful, unlike California. But Michigan did try to recall Governor Jim Blanchard in the late 80s, I believe. So it's not unheard of. You think that that there's a possibility she face a recall election?
we have a pretty stiff height on the recalls. It's about a quarter. You need to get a signature on petitions from a quarter of the population. And that's about a little over a million people. It is a little higher bar, but it's not on necessarily unheard of. We've had the Republican Senate in Michigan since 83 when Blanchard pushed through income tax hike, recalled two of the three senators in more conservative districts, Democrat senators that voted for it, and we've had the majority in the state Senate since then. So it's not unheard of, but it's a little over a million signatures is what it would be taken. I think there is an effort that a group, and I'm not familiar with the group, that they have to get the petition language authorized by the State Elections Board. And I noticed a headline the other day to get that. But you look at some of these groups, like Michigan's Against Excessive Quarantine. I think they already have like 350,000 members, and so they've only been up for about a week. So there is a real natural grassroots populace that is really unhappy. But I remind folks all the time, that is the importance of being involved, of being informed, of talking to your neighbors about these issues every election cycle. Because who you elect, whether it's sheriff or governor or president, you know, are very important. And at these times of big emergencies, you can see it affects you very, very clearly. And so, I mean, heck, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, even though the governor did, after the first order, did make some exemptions on religious institutions, there is a First Amendment freedom to religion and to assemble. But I had a church that was trying to do the right thing in the northern part of my district, right? Mm-hmm. Up in Kent County. And on Palm Sunday, they went ahead the pastor was going to do outside the church service in their cars, low frequency radio station, right? So he'd be up at a front of the platform. All the individual families would stay in the car. It's this beautiful thing in America. We have this automatic socially distanced machine called the automobile, unlike mass transit, but that's another issue. And this deputy was going around and saying, no, that's not part of the sanctuary, so it's not an exemption to the governor's orders. And I say, good for that pastor for not packing them in 2,000 people shoulder to shoulder, right?
Right.
Good for him for trying to protect, someone and still have a service, but try to do certain things. It took me 5 days to work through to finally get a frequently asked question so that they could have their Easter service the same way without getting ticketed.
You know, people just want life as close. Then they recognize normal's not coming back, but they need some semblance of normalcy.
And so I remind folks, I have a friend, a friend in Norway, and the governor banned real estate transactions in the state, right? And unless it, realtors from doing their job, unless it like has something to do specifically with the critical infrastructure piece, right? Buying land to build a hospital specifically for coronavirus patients, right? And my buddy, people point to Norway, they've brought it down quite significantly. Well, he closed on a house 2 weeks ago because the Norwegian government, in a socialist utopia, the Norwegian government challenged each of these businesses to figure out a way to do things contactless, to limit, to increase social distancing, hygiene, and sanitation. And so they still have open houses. They can only plan that the realtor can never be within so many meters of the residence. They can only have one every half hour go through the house and try to work through it. They never mandated restaurants to be closed, but they challenged restaurants to say, you got to socially distance. You can only use less than half of your capacity. And you can't use stand-up areas that can only be sit down and only people from the same household can sit together, right?
The beauty is humans will find a way, and government seems to be in the way of humans finding a way so many, many times. Eric Nesbitt, Senator, State of Michigan. I look forward to being able to cheer, maybe not shake your hand again, but clink a drink together and get back to some semblance of normalcy. Thank you for taking the time on a Sunday to chat us up and educate us about what's going on in the Great Lakes State.
Well, thanks for having me on. God bless you and all your listeners. And we will get through this. We're Americans.
I know we will.
It's just going to challenge us. And we got to step up and continue to work and be blessed that our God and our families are still with us.
That is all the time we have. Thank you guys for listening, tuning in, telling a friend. We'll be back tomorrow with another exciting episode. Stay safe.